Get those trowels and pruners ready. We're gearing up for the harvest. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our gardening show, we'll talk about the produce that's ready to be picked and processed and get tips for your late summer gardening. Joining me now, our Krohn Conservatory manager, Mark House. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Thank you.
Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator, Kamisha Montgomery. Welcome back, Kamisha.
Thank you.
And Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent, Brandon George. Hey, Brandon, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
If you've got questions for them, and we know you have questions for them, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Kamisha, let's start by talking about what should be ready for harvest right now in our gardens. What should we be looking for?
Well, what should be ready right now typically will be our tomatoes, squash, and zucchini. But unfortunately, the weather that we've had recently, some of our tomatoes aren't ripening yet, but the squash and zucchini should definitely be ready to be harvested right now. You should also have some peppers and okra growing very well. So watching out for those, because you know okra can sometimes grow overnight, it seems.
Like teenage boys. Kamisha, what do we still have time to plant in the garden?
Oh, we can definitely start to think about our next garden, but planting things like your brassicas now, starting those seeds and getting those seedlings in the ground, but also doing a quick round of maybe some squash and zucchini, just giving those a little bit of time because of our really warm, hot temperatures that we have going on right now. I would try those again. And you won't have as much issues with like the squash vine borers because their life cycle really has ended around this time. So it's a great time to start another round of those.
Brandon, what kind of unusual plants are people growing right now?
For me, I feel like this year we try to trial different things at our garden every year just for educational opportunities. And we're growing quinoa this year. And it's a crop that I've been fascinated by for a while. And in theory, you can grow it here. I will say I had to do research. So quinoa, not to take too long, quinoa is a crop that is found naturally growing in the Andes in South America. So it likes a cooler climate, drier, higher in elevation. So, but Washington State bred a variety called Day 405 that we use, bred for lower elevations. And the biggest culprit of problems with quinoa is downy mildew. Fortunately, our hasn't gotten it yet, but we've had a lot of breakage with the heavy seed heads. But it's a beautiful crop. It's in the amaranth family. And I would encourage people to try it. I think it's a beautiful, pretty crop. And obviously, it's a great grain with high protein. And so, maybe give that a try in your garden next year.
Hmm. Mark, you were saying before the show you have some friends who tried to grow a kiwi variety, that's possible around here?
Yeah, there's a hardy kiwi variety. It's very small. It's quite aggressive, I've heard. They tried it at the Cincinnati Zoo, and I remember them telling me that it took them years to control it.
Oh, my goodness. Kiwi out of control. What about at the Civic Garden Center? Kamisha, do you all have some fun, unusual stuff growing there?
Well, every year we have our Grow Fest, which is our annual plant festival. And we do have a rare and heirloom booth that we have all kinds of rare and heirloom plants that we have for sale. But one that I really like is it's a squash. Common name is like the trombone squash, so it sort of looks like a trombone shape. And what I like about it is it doesn't really have too much pest pressure, so it's not one that really gets affected by the squash vine borer that I've seen. So that's one that I think is looks unusual, grows typical, but I really like it.
How's it taste?
It tastes, you know, like a squash.
That's good. Fair. That's fair. Okay. Mark says it's good. Okay. Well, we have a caller on the line. Hey, Lori, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi, I have a disappearing question. Last year, back by our garden, we had 300 milkweeds plants for the monarchs. This year, I have three. I want to know what happened. And I also have a trumpet vine that I have trained around a dead tree that had beautiful, for years it's had beautiful blossoms for the hummingbirds, and I'm looking out, and I see two blossoms. These are disappearing questions.
Huh. Mark, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I have trumpet vine, and I've got milkweed. It's growing all over. I haven't seen a decline in it, so I don't know what may be contributing to that. I just am not sure. But now that you mention it, I have not seen our trumpet vine bloom yet.
Hmm. Brandon, could there be any kind of soil change? Or, I mean, I'm just making stuff up, but what do you have any thoughts about what could be going on for Lori's plants there?
I don't know. Trumpet vines are so finicky. You know, I've heard a lot of times they, if they're not blooming, they need to be shocked into some kind. They need to be damaged to kind of encourage them to bloom and then reproduce. But ours have been blooming here. I've seen them around in Covington blooming. So I think from plant to plant, there's a lot of variability.
Hmm. Any thoughts on the milkweed?
Don't know about that either. It's always something I watch, but I feel like I don't have enough conclusions to draw.
Well, Lori, I'm sorry we don't have better answers for you. I hope your milkweed and your comes back and that you get some beautiful, beautiful blossoms there. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Mark, I know you've got a lot of beautiful stuff blooming in your yard because you brought some flowers in to the studio today. What are you seeing in terms of flowers this time of year?
Right now, there's a lot of fragrant flowers blooming. The clethra is doing very well. It has a little pink bottle brush type flower, and it has a scent that's very strong. It's kind of a mixture of clove and vanilla, and it likes wet. I have it growing actually underwater.
Huh.
The top of the root ball is 4 inches below water, and it loves it, and it'll spread. I also have hibiscus moschuto, the dinner plate sized hibiscus flowers. They're blooming right now. Both those plants are native. One that's not native is a type of hosta that has very fragrant blooms, Hosta plantagenia. And you have to bend over to smell it, but it's wonderful. And then finally, I have a mallow plant that's blooming right now. It's interesting because not so much for the flowers, but in the middle of the winter, I'll pull it up and take the thick white roots and boil them, then pour the liquid off and add a little sugar and some egg whites and let it cool off in a pan.
Wow.
And the plant, it loves very wet. The wetter, the better. In fact, it's called the marshmallow. And that is what I make with it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, we are talking about gardening for the full hour today. We have experts here to answer your questions. Beat the rush and call right now, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mark, we have a question from our producer, Selena. This is for you. She's looking for your best advice for mounting a staghorn fern. Selena has one that's more than 40 years old. It was her grandmother's. She almost killed it. Her husband saved it. She needs to split it and mount it on a board or something in her home. Do you have any thoughts on the best way to do that?
Well, we've tried a variety of ways. You can mount it by tying it onto a board and then hanging the board. But I'll tell you, one of the best solutions for that is to put it in a hanging basket and just let it grow over the wires. We have one, a large one. I don't know how old that thing is. But that's exactly what we did. We also had luck with one that we tied directly to the trunk of a tree about 10 feet up in the air, and it just grew around the trunk, and the tree didn't mind it.
Wow. Huh. There you go. Letting nature do some of that work for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're talking about gardening. Give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email talk@wvxu.org. Brandon, I saw that planting times are more about soil temperature than air temperature. It has been so hot. Are these hot weather plants, are there any hot weather plants we can harvest later because of these changing temperatures? Is it changing what we harvest when?
You know, some plants like tomatoes have that sweet spot where it can be obviously too cold and too hot. But with warmer weather, I think you have faster growth, more photosynthesis, as long as there's enough water available. And so I think for most of the plants we grow in vegetable gardens that are warm season, they are very happy with the warm weather with adequate moisture. And I think the soil temperatures are really important, more so than the air overall, especially in the early part of the season when they're just starting to get going. And for a lot of us here, things were very delayed this year because of May being so cool and wet. And I think we're still kind of paying the price a bit with tomatoes in some ways, because I think they're a little bit behind overall.
Hmm. What do you think, Kamisha? Are there plants that we usually plant later because they need cooler temperatures? Are those schedules changing at all because of all this hot weather?
Yeah, I think the hot weather is definitely a factor. It's playing a very big factor in flowering crops. The flowers are dropping because of the temperatures constantly being over, you know, very high, over 90 degrees, even, you know, towards the evening. So their plants aren't really getting enough time to cool off. So we're seeing less production and as far as the flowers and the fruiting. And we're also seeing less production in the pollinators because, you know, with those temperatures being so high, we don't want to be out there and neither do the pollinators. So, it's really playing a big part in fruit production now.
Okay. We have Sandra on the line. Hi, Sandra. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
It's actually Cassandra. I'm the urban forester for Newport. And I had a question for Brandon about the spotted lanternfly. I found one yesterday at my home and was wondering what the extent of the invasion was in the Kentucky area.
Ah, good question. Sorry I got your name wrong there. Brandon, do you have thoughts or information about the spotted lanternfly in northern Kentucky?
I do. So they were first identified, I think, in Kenton County last year in the North Kentucky area. And the state is aware of it. So people are still sending us identification questions and also just to let us know. But we know they're here. So if anyone's listening, we don't need any more verification sent to us. But we obviously ask you to kill them if you see them as much as possible. Remove Tree of Heaven, Elianthus. And then also in the winter, look for identification, look for photos of what the eggs look like. And they're often found on like cushions and outdoor things around your home. And so if you can kill them in the winter, you do a lot of good to preventing them from becoming adults in the summer. As right now, you're seeing a lot of adults present. So they're here and they're going to continue to get worse until they reach a peak population like they have out in the East Coast. And fortunately, it's nothing to really worry about with vegetable gardens. It's more of an issue for like grape growers, maple trees, Tree of Heaven. So a lot of those invasive Tree of Heavens, this is another great reason to cut them down.
Okay. Cassandra, I hope that helps. I mean, I think if I'm remembering correctly, even Joe Boggs, our resident bug lover, says you should kill spotted lanternflies. So even Joe does not stand up for the spotted lanternfly. Well, we will be back with our gardening show after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with more of today's gardening show. My guests are Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George, and Crone Conservatory Manager Mark House. They're ready to answer your questions. Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We've gotten some emails into the show. One is, I'm going to direct this to you, Mark. Trisha writes, I've had my white clematis for about 12 years. It's quite large, approximately 4 feet tall and as wide. It has blooms in late spring and has done so profusely each year. However, this year it only greened up on a few stems and barely bloomed. Sadly, it looks dead. I've never cut it back and never to the ground, but wondering if I should give that a try this fall in order to see if it will come back next spring. I really hate to lose it. Mark, Trisha did send us a picture, which I showed you during the break. What do you think?
Well, it's a beautiful clematis and very impressive in full bloom. I will tell you that clematis comes in three different kinds. They call them A, B, or C. And the one you prune in the spring, one you prune in the fall, and one you can prune either time. Without knowing specifically what variety of clematis it is, I don't know when to prune it. rejuvenating it may help, but I'll tell you, as I sat here and thought about it, I have read that clematis like to have their feet cool. So they don't like to have the sun shining on the base of the plant. And sometimes that can cause some damage. So I'd recommend planting something around the base of it just to give it a little shade down at the bottom.
Hmm. Some little slippers or something for your clematis. There you go. We also got an email from Ginger. Ginger wants to know about good varieties for beauty berry bush. Do you have thoughts on that, Mark?
Beauty berries are wonderful. I am learning that I like to cut them back in February and let them regrow. They seem to put on more of a show. Calicarpa, it's a wonderful plant. I like the purple ones. That's my preference. But they come in a variety of colors, pinks and whites. And they're a very well-behaved shrub. I don't know. I can't think of any cultivars right off the top of my head, but they're a nice addition.
Yeah. Brandon, do you have any cultivars of beauty berry bushes you like?
I don't know. No, I don't actually. We have it here, but I have no idea what cultivar we have, honestly.
Okay. Well, we also got an email from Joseph. He writes, I have multiple tomato and pepper plants, and I also have a tomatillo plant. Most of the plants have already started producing fruit. However, the tomatillo has only had flowers at this point. Is there something I should do to help to produce fruit? What do you think, Kamisha?
Well, with the temperatures being so high, I mean, even the tomatoes, they're probably taking a while to ripen. But with the tomatillos, one of the things you can do is possibly try to help them pollinate. Typically, when the bees go into the flower, they'll shake it to release the pollen. So one of the things you can do is sort of help that out in case the bees aren't particularly caring for these really hot temperatures and just try to self-pollinate. There's different techniques that you can do to try to go from the male flower to the female flower, just using maybe like a small brush or a small paintbrush, or sort of just shaking the plant a little bit, not vigorously, but just shaking it a little bit to release some of that pollen and sort of help out the job of the pollinators that might be overlooking this particular plant.
Okay. We also got an email from Molly. Molly writes, what is the best weed killer to use in a flower bed? I'm going to ask you about that, Mark.
Well, it depends on what the weeds are. I mean, if you're trying to control grass in irises, there was an herbicide called Post, P-O-A-S-T, and it worked like a charm. It just kills grass. I don't know how they do that.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to control broadleaves, and there's 2,4-D, it only controls broadleaves. You really have to exercise caution, read the label. Oh my gosh. And just find out what your target weeds are before you start spraying anything.
That makes sense. And let's see, we have an email from Danny. Danny writes, I plan on planting a bunch of pawpaw seeds in my partially shaded backyard this fall. I'm almost done clearing out all honeysuckle and other invasive plants. Good for you, Danny. What other suggestions do you have for giving the pawpaws the best chance of thriving? What do you think, Kamisha?
Well, the seed saving part aspect really needs to be paid attention to. They really like to be stored in like cooler temperatures. So you have to sort of mimic that natural response or that natural way of how the pawpaws would survive in those cooler temperatures. And then you possibly want to go through a process called stratification just to sort of give that germination a little bit of easier time. So that can be something that they explore to have some successful pawpaws germinate.
Okay. Brandon, do you have any other pawpaw thoughts for Danny?
No, I was going to say the same thing. It definitely probably needs winter stratification. And I would just make sure it stays clear of competition because they're kind of slow to start. I have some seedlings and just make sure they're free of as much competition from either plants covering them by light or, root space. So just watch that until they get established for a while.
Okay. We have an email from Paul. Paul says, I've been doing a lot of weeding this year. I throw all into the composter. My friend said I was throwing a lot of weed seeds into the composter that will be very happy next spring when I use the compost. Is this true? What do you think? You're shaking your head in a way that shows some skepticism, Mark.
Well, when plants are composting, they build up a lot of heat as the microorganisms break down the organic matter, and it can get up to 150 degrees. That will normally sterilize seeds, but it's important to make sure it goes through that heat cycle and use well-rotted compost in your garden, and that should eliminate a lot of the weed seed.
Mm-hmm. Kamisha, what, do you put weeds in your compost or no?
It depends on the compost system and how much time and attention that it's being paid to. Like you mentioned before, as long as that compost system is reaching that 150 degrees, then, you know, it should be able to sterilize those seeds. But like the person who sent in the email, it's going to have a chance if you're not paying attention to it and not providing the correct, you know, nitrogen to ratios to really heat that up. Then, yeah, they will grow back next year. One of the things you can do is putting a lot more organic material and some manure to try to heat that up to, you know, eradicate some of those seeds that or problems that you'll have next spring.
Okay. We have Sandy on the line. Hi, Sandy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I wanted to ask, I had a couple of verbena that weren't really flowering, and I think it's because I wasn't putting them in enough sun. I have had this recurring problem. There's something that's digging the two verbena out and getting into the, I don't know what it's looking for, and it doesn't touch any of the other plants. Do you know what's digging out the verbena?
Do you have any thoughts on that, Mark?
Sometimes some of the fertilizers that are used are attractive to animals or rodents that dig things up. There's a wonderful product called Deer Scram that I use, and you just sprinkle a little bit of it down at the base of the plant, and boy, that really discourages a lot of pests.
Not just deer?
Not just deer.
Okay. Well, maybe you can try that, Sandy. Thanks for listening. We appreciate your call. Mark, you know, we were talking about how lots of people put their houseplants outside for the summer, and then they can grow in greater amounts than people anticipate. So what do you do if your houseplants have gotten so big you don't know if they'll fit back in their spot inside anymore?
Yeah, the Corona Conservatory, we get this call a lot in the fall, and people are very concerned about this, if not a little panicked, because they can't fit the plant back in the house through the door. Now is a really good time to go out and take a look at that, maybe even measure the door, measure the plant, because if you prune it back, and a lot of these houseplants can be pruned back, there's a number of these plants that respond well to it, as a matter of fact. You're reducing the amount that has to be cut off, and it's better for the plant. So it's kind of a maintenance issue over the summer. Plants that love to be pruned are indoor citrus and ficus species, and cacti. Hmm. Cacti respond very well to being cut back.
Yeah, so a little summer haircut so you don't have to give a dramatic makeover for the fall, I guess, when you're moving them back inside. Okay, well, again, we're talking about gardening. For the full hour today, we have an expert on houseplants for today's show, and we can talk about vegetables, fruit, we can talk about lawns and all kinds of stuff. Give us a call with your questions, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Brandon, should we be fertilizing any of our plants this time of year? Are we past that point? When do you know when your plant or something in your garden needs a little boost from some fertilizer?
Well, I would always recommend, obviously look for visual signs, but doing a soil test is really helpful, especially if it's something that is a site where you're growing like vegetables or things that use up a lot of nutrients, it's really great to do that. That way you don't just fertilize to not know. If you do think you are going to need fertilizer, certainly you want to get, we're getting towards the point where we want to kind of stop using a lot of nitrogen heavy fertilizers because we don't want to encourage fresh growth that potentially might not harden off before it gets cold. So August might be around where it ends. But then, of course, things that are higher in phosphorus, potassium, great for fruiting, root development, those can continue to be used. But we want to avoid like high nitrogen fertilizers soon. And also, fall is a great time to fertilize because a lot of plants are, you know, going dormant. They're putting their energy into rooting. But spring is as well, potentially, particularly when a plant is actually starting to use that for growth.
Mm. So summer, not so much, either fall or spring.
Depending on what you're doing and what particular nutrient we're looking for too.
Mm-hmm. Kamisha, do you have a favorite fertilizer you like to use?
I definitely do. It's compost.
Just talking about that, huh?
Yeah, I definitely like to use compost, throughout the growing season. Just sort of sprinkling some around my plants, careful not to touch the stem of the plants. But other than that, throughout the fall and winter, I like to use cover crop. And that's also going to add some organic matter and nutrients to my soil.
What are your favorite cover crops?
I like legumes. I like legumes because typically I'm going to grow into the fall and winter more brassicas, green leafy vegetables, and some root crops. So legumes is your typical clovers, peas, and beans. So I like to grow those. And I like to use some brassicas, like some mustards. So it's sort of like a mix.
Okay. Mark, is it a myth that used tea bags are good to fertilize houseplants? And somebody here at the office brought in these fertilizing tea bags that you can buy. Have you seen those, or are they effective at all?
I've seen them. Those, I don't think, actually had tea in them, though. I think it was some kind of a fertilizer. And the people that use them the most are members of the Bonsai Society because it's a slow-release fertilizer. Bonsais have to be watered almost every day in a lot of cases. So it's a continuous feed. That's the only experience I have with the teabag fertilizer.
Okay. We have a question for you, Mark. When do you know it's time to fertilize indoor potted plants? Would you need a soil test for those?
Well, a soil test is very exacting. And that was kind of drilled into me when I was a student at The Ohio State University about soil testing, because that tells you exactly what you need and when. But for potted plants, if you are interested, there are home soil test kits. They're not expensive, and they're pretty accurate, I would say. They're not exact, but they work. Just periodic fertilizing, it depends on what type of plant it is. And, that water-soluble fertilizer, it does work. Mm. The Miracle-Gros and others.
Yeah. Okay. We have Sharon on the line. Hi, Sharon. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. Well, I have bag bugs on my junipers. I had them last year. So obviously they've laid eggs since last year. I have been going out and picking the bags off now. There seems to be various sizes of bags, so I'm thinking there's multi-generations in there. I've gone online and read how to treat the problem, and the best thing right now, I understand this time of year, is to be picking them off because spraying them doesn't penetrate their bags. However, one thing I did watch online was someone picked off a couple of the bags, put them in a brown paper bag, and watched and waited for the caterpillars to emerge. And then she said, that tells you the time that you should be spraying for them. I had read another place where you spray in the spring. So I'm confused as to the timing, which is very important. And also, if we do spray, what can we use where we're not going to harm other insects?
Mm. Mark, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's a Lepidoptera species, I believe. And there is an organic control, I think it was called Dipel. And it's some kind of microorganism that they either ingest by feeding or direct contact. So the timing of the spray is important. The instructions are on the back. It's not expensive, and it does work.
Hmm. So it's basically she doesn't have to put a bunch of these bags in a paper bag to figure it out. You can get the buy the stuff and read the back. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Brandon, do you see a lot of bagworm problems in northern Kentucky or bagweeds?
Certain times. You know, we have them. I mean, I see them. I feel like I see them the most on arborvitaes, like eastern arborvitaes. But I haven't seen a lot this year.
Yeah. Do you agree with the picking them off strategy and buying the stuff and spraying when it says to spray?
I do. Yeah. And I think picking them off is great if you can reach them. But obviously, there's a lot of times that you can't. So the spraying would be a better solution, again, for where you can reach with the spray, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks, Sharon. Good luck with those pests. I hope you can get rid of them in a way that makes sense for you and your garden. We are going to take another short break. We'll be back to wrap up today's gardening show. If you have questions, now is the time to call. The number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back to finish up today's gardening show. My guests are Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George, Crone Conservatory Manager Mark House, and Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery. They're ready to answer your gardening questions, so give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have a caller. Hey, Sherry, thanks so much for your call. What's your question?
Hi, yes. So we have a small flower garden that we really love that has clematis and lilies and a butterfly bush. But we also have a vinyl fence that's developed a fair amount of pollen and maybe algae that is on it. And we'd like to be able to clean the fence, but we don't, you know, we need to know what to use that won't hurt the flowers.
Hmm. Great question. Brandon, do you have any thoughts?
I'm wondering if it can be washed with a powerful sprayer, if that would help get it off. If it's really stuck on, I would say there's probably some natural, solutions you could find, I would imagine, to get, depending on how stuck on the moss is or, fungal.
Do you
issue,
have any,
so.
Yeah. What do you think, Mark? And when you're talking about a powerful sprayer, I assume that's just water. Is there anything you would recommend, Mark, a product of some kind?
You know, there's a product that we use in the greenhouse. I think it's called Green Shield, and it works very well on algae and things like that, but you wouldn't want to let it get on the plants. Otherwise, it's I think it's kind of acidic, which helps clean things.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Sherry, I hope that helps. Good luck with your fence cleaning there. We have another caller on the line, I think, but yep, there we go. Hey, Beck, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi, I would like to know why my tomato skins are so tough every year in my raised bed garden.
Hmm. What do you think, Kamisha?
Well, it could be the particular variety. You know, you can try to research that variety and see if that is what that variety basically has as you know what. But other than that, you know, just try to pick a variety that doesn't have as much tough skin. I'm not sure if that's happening with all of your tomatoes, but you know, basically I would research that variety and see if that's something that you know, particularly that variety has.
Beck, do you know what variety tomatoes you have?
Year after year, all varieties, early girls, big boys, tomato, cherry tomatoes, all of them are tough.
Wow. That's quite the mystery. What do you think, Kamisha?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's, you know, I don't think it's a deficiency or if you're adding too much fertilizer. I'm not really sure why all of your tomato skins with all of those different varieties would have such tough skin.
Hmm. Have you, Brandon or Mark, have either of you ever run into this with your own tomato plants?
Sometimes with Roma tomatoes. I'll tell you, though, if you're looking for a really tasty tomato that doesn't have a thick skin, I would try pink Brandywine. It's like one of the top tasting tomatoes, wins the contests each year, and it's really good. Doesn't have thick skin.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Beck, I hope that helps. Also, my husband's a woodworker. He'd say sharper knife. That would be his answer, but I'm sure you've already tried that. So thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it. Hey, Pam, thanks so much for your call. What's your question?
Hi. I'm planted hydrangea flowers.
Uh-oh, did we lose you, Pam? I heard you say, I planted hydrangea flowers, but we kind of lost your audio there. Maybe we'll have to come back to you. Mark, let me ask you this. We've gotten a ton of rain lately, which can be a wonderful thing, but can all that moisture cause problems too, maybe fungal problems?
It can, and I'm hearing that it's showing up in a lot of turf situations, golf courses and athletic fields. And unfortunately, when these spots or fungal issues turn up, you can't treat it. It's always preventative. But I'll tell you, this is one of the best growing years I can remember. We have consistently had rain almost weekly. It's been rare that I've had to pull out a hose. So I'm enjoying this.
Okay. So we'll take the rain and try to avoid the fungal problems in the future with prevention. Well, Pam, okay, I have some information about Pam's question. She has hydrangeas. They're growing for the first time. She deadheaded them, but they are not reflowering. Who has thoughts on that? Is that something you've dealt with, Brandon?
I think it's going to depend on what type it is. I think the biggest issue people run into is with the macrophylla types, the big mop heads that bloom on old wood. Sometimes they have the ones that, like endless summer, that bloom on new and old wood. But you have to be really careful with pruning and the timing of pruning them because they bloom on old wood. So I would kind of need to know maybe what specific type of hydrangea.
Yeah, and Mark is nodding his head in agreement with that. Well, Pam, I'm sorry we lost your audio. I'm going to hang up, but if you want to try to call back, if you know what type of hydrangea you have, please feel free to call back. We now have Kathy on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have a 100-year-old London plane tree that looks like it developed a canker within the past 2 weeks or so, and I'm just wondering how I could have avoided it and what might be a good replacement tree for that.
Hmm. Any thoughts on that, Mark?
Did you want to stick with the same kind of species, or are you interested in exploring other varieties?
Yeah, I'm interested in any good suggestions, something that'll last a long while.
Yeah, at least 100 years. I mean, this poor tree put in 100 years of service.
Oh. Well, there are some oaks, some of the red oaks, some of the even some of the white oaks that would do well. They might get awfully big. Linden trees do well. Some of my favorites that live for a long time are the sweet gums. And lately I've been planting some Nisa specimens that I believe are long-lived, but I don't know yet. I've just started planting them. But they're so beautiful in the fall, that bright red leaf.
Hmm. Yeah. Brandon, you have any other suggestions for Kathy you'd like to add?
I think you guys covered everything.
Okay. Well, good luck, Kathy. Sorry to hear about your London plane tree. 100 years, that's a good run. So good job, tree. Kamisha, you know, for some of us, the harvest seems to come all at once. What are some of your favorite ways to preserve the fruit or vegetables or herbs that your garden produces?
Oh, yeah, definitely you have to get ready for those determinate varieties of tomatoes that just seem to ripen all at once. And what I like to do is have an alternate plan besides giving them away to friends and family and neighbors.
Yeah, you got to keep that, all that you worked for, all that stuff. You got to keep it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I like to can. So I'll do like a pressure canning with a large amount of my harvest, or hot water bath canning technique. But you also can dehydrate. You know, you can also dehydrate, make some kind of seasonings with them. But the thing about tomatoes, I also like to save those seeds, especially if it's an heirloom tomato. I like to save those seeds to make sure that I'm having that same variety next year if I really liked it. But the thing about saving those seeds of tomato plants, it's a little different than other varieties of crops. You know, it's not as simple as just dehydrating those and saving those in a cool, low humidity space. You have to go through a fermenting process to get sort of that gel-like substance from around those seeds, because that is what's basically a germination inhibitor. So it's really important to get that from around the seeds. But those are the two things that I like to do in preparation for a harvest, is think about food preservation and seed saving and storage.
Okay. We have a follow-up comment from Trisha, who was talking before about hydrangeas. She says, they're endless summer variety hydrangeas. They've not bloomed for several years. Should they be shocked? Do you have thoughts on that, Brandon?
I would make sure they're in the right place and making sure they get enough sun. If they haven't bloomed for many years, I'm not sure. I've heard not great things about them overall. And I would need to know like more particular site specific conditions, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I would say don't prune them and just kind of see how they do if you are pruning them. But there might be other factors at play.
Okay. We have Megan on the line. Megan, I understand you have some tough tomato skin information.
Yeah. So I was just going to call the comment that in the past, I've had troubles with the same things, and I was just wondering if the previous caller had intense heat or was unable to retain a lot of moisture in the soil, because that might be why it's affecting all varieties and not just a specific species of tomato.
Is that the problem that you've had that's contributed to tough tomato skin?
Yeah, we ended up moving them to a different location in our garden that was a little more shaded, so it doesn't get as intense heat, and haven't had any problems.
Okay, so maybe sunburned tomatoes. That's good to know. Well, thanks, Megan. We appreciate that advice for our last caller. That's great. Kamisha, you were talking about canning. My dad's mom, my Nana, used to make fantastic bread and butter pickles. It seemed like a lot of work. Mark or Brandon, do either of you can? Or are you pro-pickling? What do you do with your harvest?
My family used to make bread and butter pickles, and we love those. I haven't made them myself, though.
Yeah. What about you, Brandon? How do you preserve your goodies from the garden?
I do sometimes freeze things, but I kind of like them fresh most of the time, so I give them away if I can't eat it all.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'm with Kamisha. I would want to save more of mine. Do you have preservation techniques you like best, Mark?
In my family, we like to grow a lot of the Roma tomatoes, and we slice them up, put them on jelly roll pans with olive oil and some herbs, and slowly cook them in the oven overnight. So they're like sun-dried tomatoes, and oh my gosh, they're sweet and tart. And then we pack them up into little Tupperware containers with the olive oil. And all winter long, we dig a few out and add them to our dishes.
Mmm, that sounds delightful. So, Kamisha, what are the big fall gardening chores that we need to be thinking about right now in our vegetable gardens?
I would say think about what you're going to do next. You know, one of the things is think about what you're going to do with your harvest. How are you going to save your seeds and store them? But also think about the nutrients that you need to replenish in your soil, especially if you're going to start growing into the fall and winter using different techniques to protect those plants, like cover crop, floating row cover, or greenhouse plastic. But start thinking about those tasks and those materials and supplies that you'll need. And especially, like I said, if you're not thinking about growing anything, you don't want to leave that soil bare. So just start to purchase things like cover crops. If you are thinking about growing into the fall and winter, start thinking about replenishing that soil, adding some compost so that you can start some seedlings or direct sow some seeds into that soil. And in the brassica family or some garlic in the alum family and some root vegetables. So start thinking about what you're going to do next and think about what you currently have in your ground, what nutrients that it's taking up from the soil so that you know how to proper replenish that for your next rotation.
Okay. We got a comment from Kathy on preserving tomatoes. She chops them up with garlic and onion and salt. She throws them in a pan so they dehydrate, puts them in a freezer bag, and this way she has a tomato base. That sounds smart too. So, Brandon, is now the time to be ordering flowering bulbs? Should we be doing that now, or should we already have them?
No, I mean, there's still plenty of time. It's definitely better for availability to order them well in early summer, just because sometimes by the time you start thinking about bulbs, they're already sold out, especially if you're looking for something really in particular. But no, now is a great time to start assessing fall bulb needs. Spring bulbs, but those you'd plant in the fall. So yeah, there's still time, and look through websites and yeah.
Yeah. Mark, do you already have all yours? Based on the flowers you brought in, I feel like you're probably very organized with your flowers.
You know, I love the oriental lilies, and I placed a big order. They'll be delivered in the fall.
Okay. Well, should we be thinking about cuttings from our ornamentals this time of year, Mark? Is that important?
Cuttings from the ornamentals.
Yeah, it's like for propagating and that kind of stuff.
What I like to do, I go out into the area where I've got fruit trees and mark branches that I want to cut in February for pruning.
Okay. Well, terrific. I've been talking with Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Crone Conservatory Manager Mark House, and Kenton County Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.